the Best in Greenway podcast. Carl Beston here. On today's episode of the podcast, we talk to Olgun Olic, pretty much the undisputed best basketball journalist in Australia, about the upcoming FIBA World Cup this Friday. We chat about how the Boomers are progressing and giving our predictions for the Cup all the way from the group stage to the final. Hope you enjoy. Olgun Olic, ESPN Insider, host of the Ball in the Real World podcast. Thanks for coming on the pod. What's happening, my brother?
Hi, Carl. What's going on?
Mate, World Cup. But you're the one with the exciting news going on here. You're the one about to fly out. Are you excited?
Yeah, very excited. I covered this tournament in 2019. That was really enjoyable. Wasn't the finish the Boomers wanted, and that was like a really dramatic end. We had like Luke Longley in like a dark tunnel telling us that Spain got kissed on the dick again, and or we like that quote that went everywhere. So that was super fun. And obviously being sort of adjacent to the Boomers this entire time, covering their journey, and then being able to like get to like this apex point, which is this, and then Paris, like these are really enjoyable to be a part of. And you can feel like the mixture of an excitement and tension. So these are fun to be around.
Oh, 100%. And speaking of that, like how was the feel of the team different from 2019 to now 2023?
I think they feel more comfortable. They have all their processes in place at this point. This isn't like, when it comes to, so there's a lot of talk about the culture, but it's not about like introducing the culture and whatever. It's about a continuation of that. And I feel like, obviously, that senior core has done a really good job of sort of implementing all that stuff. And then now it's just about making sure that everyone is locked in and all of those processes are like pretty like that they flow super well. And I feel like they're going to this tournament with like all of their like all of the tools have already been there, and now like all those tools have like come together, and you know the processes are like really seamless now. Everything flows super easily.
And the personality of the team, vastly different or somewhat similar?
Well, it is different because you're not just incorporating the new guys, but you're making them really prominent guys on this team. So Giddy is a different personality. Mm. And so you're adding that not just as a player, but you're adding him as the point guard, as like the main creator, the lead guard. You're adding Josh Green, who was sort of the 12th man on that Tokyo team, and now he'll likely be a starter going into this one. And so as far as like the vibe of the team, you can tell that it's skewing younger and it's skewing newer. And while those like the sort of the culture and the sentiments that those older guys implemented are still there, you can tell that it's a little bit more progressive in the sense of just like the direction that they go with regard to a lot of the things they do. Everything feels newer and younger and like maybe slightly fresher.
Yep. And speaking of, I suppose, we just mentioned Josh Green there, right? So I think one of the key things in this team is going to be how rotations are run by Brian in this situation, just simply because we have a lot of, you know, big-name talent at similar positions, and it's how you can kind of make them, you know, and some of them, they are versatile players, right? They're versatile wings, so they realistically can play 2 through 4, most of them. It's about allocating minutes each way, etc. But, like, we've got, say Matisse Thybulle, right? Like you watch him in the game against France on Sunday, and he's arguably like our most important player. You know, and he's probably going to be coming off the bench. And it's like, how do you see the rotations going with this team, and where do you think people naturally fit in that?
I don't think starting lineups are going to be like too fixed in this tournament. I feel like we've seen like a general guide on what Brian Goorjian wants. Like he wants to start bigger generally. But like, it wouldn't surprise me, for example, if Thybulle ends up starting at the four in some stretches. It wouldn't surprise me if Joe Ingles starts at the four in some stretches. I feel like Goorjian sort of noticed that Thybulle off the bench is like a really cool spark plug. I think he likes the idea of that. I think he thinks Josh Green is maybe more solid as an on-ball defender, and the skill set works better next to guys like Giddy and Patty and whoever starts at the five, and Nick Kay or whoever starts at the four. So I don't think anything's fixed, but I feel like everyone sort of has to like swallow. And that's the point of these, like the Boomers and generally in national team play, everyone's just got to swallow their ego and just like play where you're fitting at the moment. And so at this moment, or at least for the past two games, Thybulle's come off the bench, made a really big impact, and maybe because that's just where his impact is the most effective. But yeah, like you said, like dudes, like I look at like Giddy, Thybulle, Green, Ingles, Dante, all these dudes can basically play like 2-4 or 1-4. And so I just feel like everything's just going to be like mix and matched.
Yeah. And that's the thing that people don't kind of get to. It is kind of funny that we have these wing guards who are bigger than, like taller than some of our format. I mean, I think Josh Giddy is the same, if not, yeah, I think he's taller than Jack White, right? So like, and in the Cooks.
Taller than Jack White, same size as Xavier Cooks. It's hilarious.
Yeah, right. So it's like you have multiple guys who are capable of guarding multiple positions, but it, one area where I guess where there has been a concern about is the loss of Jock Landale. It's a huge deal, right? Like, I get it. Like, Jock, you know, and Jock is probably our number one, like, basic structural center that existed within the unit. How do you think Gorgon schemes around that? And, like, what's your feel as to what, you know, what's been going on around camp, et cetera, now in the days post, well, I mean, they're over there now, but what's your feel on it post-injury, how this team kind of schemes around it?
Yeah, so it feels like, so Duop obviously goes up into the starting lineup, but I don't think there's any sort of overreaction of like, okay, like we have to be heaps big, we have to like try to be heaps big now. I feel like instead the mindset seems to be like, let's just lean into
what we are,
the like skill sets of the guys that we have, and see, and they like do that in an elite way and see what works. So I think Gorgon may have mentioned it, or someone mentioned it, and I think it's correct. And the idea of, instead of just playing, like, of just trying to be big, just like you have a lot of feisty wing defenders who can play up and in, they can just be super aggressive defensively and make it difficult for the big man to be fed the ball. So that's part of it. And then the other part is, like, it seemed like in that France game, like, I don't think we saw a ton of Duop Reath. Like we saw a decent amount, but not, we didn't see like Duop Reath have his minutes and Jock Landale's minutes. We saw a decent amount of small ball there. And I think there's just trust in like the athleticism of Xavier Cooks and Jack White, the timing of those dudes, and just the general, like the schemes of that entire unit defensively. Like there was a possession in the third quarter there where like Giddy was the one who was like helping down low, and then he went out to like, to help on the drive, and then the ball rotated, and Giddy was the one who came round and helped on the other drive, and they forced a shot clock violation. That was almost like the turning point of that game. But like, I feel like they're just trusting in that. They have like big dudes, they have athletes. They don't necessarily have the footers, but they have like those other pieces that can be really feisty defensively and really junk it up. And I feel like that's the way that they're going to get through this.
Yeah. And the other big, I think the other big talking point that's sort of come out of the practice games, so whatever you can draw out of them, right? Like it's always a question mark what you can really get out of these practice games, apart from, oh yeah, let's see what some lineups kind of work together. Like let's get some run into the legs of guys. Let's get them a feel together on the court as opposed to just being in camp. But the Mills shooting percentage has been a question mark coming out of it. I'm not as alarmed as some other people. I'll kind of go into that in a minute, but what's your take on it?
Yeah, so like practice games and warm-up games and all those things, like they're good to get indicators of different things. I agree with you. We're not going to make like grand sweeping statements based on what we see in warm-up games. I'm not overly concerned about it, but I'm not going to ignore it. Like it feels like an issue, because the problem is if he's not making shots, then he's a net negative out there, right?
Yeah.
You would rather have Josh Green out there at the two. Yeah. And if he's going to, as in if someone's going to go and shoot, you know, like less than 20% from three over a tournament, you might as well have that be like, you might as well have that be Dustin Daniels.
Yeah.
At the very least, he's going to be like a net positive on the other end, right?
Yeah.
So like that's, like those are the conversations that sort of go through my head. You do have to trust that Paddy will find it. It seems like the shots are there. Like they're good shots. They're just not falling. That seems to be the case with the entire group. If I've got to go back and look at all the shooting numbers over all these warm-up games, but I don't think the Boomers have shot particularly well. But if you go back and look, it looks like the shots are there. I just think they just need a ton more reps. I think Giddy and Paddy, their connection is still growing. I don't think Giddy really knows where Paddy wants his shots all the time. I think Paddy has to figure that out too. So look, I'm not overly concerned, but it's like it's something that's in the back of my mind going into these games, because if he doesn't get that figured out relatively quickly, then there's no, then like you have like a sense of urgency in these games. You can't be messing around with that.
No, correct. And I think also he's kind of a victim of his own previous standards, if that kind of makes sense too, because I do think, like, I think the answer lies somewhere in the middle of this. Paddy's in his mid-30s now. Like, people just think, I remember having chats with people who have been DMing me pre-World Cup, and they're just like, oh, wow, we've got FIBA Paddy though. And I'm like, yes and no, right? Like, the guy's in his mid-30s now. Like, he's not frozen in time. He is not going to be Tokyo Paddy forever. He's not going to be 2019 Paddy forever. Like, you can't... I'm not sure at this stage, when he hasn't really had a solid NBA home for a couple of years and he's struggled to find minutes, et cetera, that you're going to necessarily get the same guy. Like, people just aren't frozen in time. And yes, the team has improved, right, in some senses, because you've added guys, like, you know, other guys develop and other guys fall back in that time. And I'm not saying Paddy's fallen back and he's a minor role player on this team or any of this sort of stuff now, or he's finished or anything like that. It's that you kind of have to adjust expectations for each, and you're going to have other guys who develop and get better. Then you're going to have other guys that, you know, fall off even marginally towards the end of their careers. Now, I'm pretty sure that if you asked Joe and that Joe would say, you know what, I was better in 2009, you know, I was better in 2019, 2015. He's not going to say that this is the best version of Joe Ingles that he's ever been, right? Like, it's just not realistic, yeah. For example. So you can't, like, freeze time on these guys and go, wow, we got Josh Giddy now, we got Josh Green now, we got all these guys, and then go, and Paddy and it, Joe are still going to be the same in that. It's just not realistic, right? And you just got to hope that those guys can hit the big shots and be big in, you know, high leverage moments, right? That's where they got their experience in, and I think that's key, right?
Yeah, and like we saw Paddy, he hit the sort of go-ahead bucket against France, and like, that's cool. I think the hope is just that the coaching staff doesn't get bogged down in, like, history.
Yeah.
And, like, historical, and just the, like, as in, if they don't move with the times as well, then they're going to get stuck.
Yeah.
So if it does look like one of these older dudes isn't particularly doing great, then I feel like you may have to, give Josh Green a few extra minutes, give Dante some extra minutes instead. Like, I feel like we have to just react accordingly. Like, react to the evidence that's in front of you. Don't react to the evidence that's, like, preceded it.
And the issue with that is, too, it's like, what evidence is sort of profound? Like, what evidence hits harder, right? Because if you look at it, like, you know what? Like, someone could have a great game against Japan, and that is not going to translate against... I will get into the group stuff a bit later, but that's not necessarily going to translate to the Germany game, if that kind of makes it. So it's always hard to read these. Same as the practice game shit, right? Like, you're like, well, what can I take from this? What evidence is there? And someone could have a great game against, you know, Japan, who are a lower level FIBA team, and then they rock up against Germany and go, oh, fuck, like, what the hell just happened? Right. So it's always, I think it's going to be read and react with a lot of this stuff, right?
And look, I trust in Brian Gorgian to be obviously aware of these things. They're not going into this tournament blind. Like, Gorgian is switched on. Adam Caporn is switched on.
Matt
Nielsen is. Dave Patrick is. Like, these are like pretty qualified, experienced dudes who are at the kind of the decision makers of this stuff. Like, they're not, as it would be just like, no one should be thinking that these guys are going in thinking like, oh, like, we thought Patty Mills was like 29 years old. Like, what happened here?
Yeah.
Like, is he not, like, did not just come off a great season with the Spurs? Like, no, like, these dudes are like pretty tuned in. Like, they're aware of what's in front of them. So I feel like we just, like, generally just have to give them more credit to be able to read and react.
Yeah, exactly. They're not the guys complaining about it on Twitter, you know. Like, so it's just, it is what it is, right? I was going to go, like, I was kind of can I ask what you see the path being and what the, you know, in terms of ceiling and floor and all that kind of stuff. But I kind of think maybe we're just better off going through the groups and then kind of getting a general, more global feel on where the World Cup is at. Well, I guess let's talk about their groups specifically with, I mean, obviously they've got Germany, Finland and Japan with them that open up against Finland on Friday night here. What's your general vibe on the group? Obviously Germany are the threat, but you see any other sort of landmines around that we might not be seeing?
Like before Rui dropped out, I would have considered Japan, like, not necessarily a landmine, but maybe just like a little speed bump, maybe. But like I really don't see them as a threat in any way. And it would be really disappointing if they can't get over Finland and do it somewhat convincingly. I'm not expecting like a 30-point win, but I think Australia would do a lot for themselves to get through that game, looking like the obvious better team in that matchup. I feel like that'll just help with the confidence going forward. And we can talk like ceilings and floors, but I feel like if we just go through, like simulate this group and simulate this tournament and just see where this like mock sim takes us. So like I can imagine, let's say out of Group E, which is Australia's group, I can imagine Australia and Germany coming out of that. And then on the other end, like let's say, group as in F. like the Group F, which is the other Okinawa group, let's say Slovenia. And who out of Georgia and Venezuela are you picking out of that?
I'm picking Georgia.
With respect to Cape Verde.
Yeah, I'm picking Georgia, and I don't think they're very good either. So, like, it's not so much I'm picking Georgia because they're good. I'm picking them because Venezuela is so bad. As harsh as that sounds, so I tend to be a little bit.
No, like, time. I get it. Australia beat them by 1,000 points. It makes total sense.
No, that's. I just think like Georgia, they'll probably come in with just maybe a little bit more. I mean, we'll get more of a feel after they play them in the next couple of days. But I think they're just probably going to be a bit more of a disciplined, hard body, physical team than what Venezuela is.
Yeah,
no,
they've
kind
got
of
more.
Think,
they've got more size.
Yeah,
they can compete up front with these teams. Like I get that. And so then they go through to what looks like Group K.
Yeah.
Obviously, so Australia would, assuming Australia gets through, they would have to play those two Group F teams. Basically, everyone just plays the teams that haven't played yet.
Yeah.
And then the top two from that get through the quarters. So only two come out of Okinawa. So one of Germany, Australia, Slovenia's not making it out of there.
Yeah. And we're both on the same page that we think Slovenia is going to be the team that misses?
I think so. Just because they're not as deep as they were in Tokyo. And as great as Luka is, he is one of, if not the best player in this tournament. It's just a lot for him to carry. And so I just think Australia, Germany, they're more talented across the board. They're deeper. They still have good top tier talent. I think they're built to get through to the final eight.
Yeah, this is the thing. And the Kankar injury really hurts. Like that really hurts a team that lacks depth to lose your second best player. Right before the tournament in camp is really, it just stings. And I think that's a real theme of this tournament. I'm not here having a pity party for Slovenia either. Like most teams have had most of the big dog teams have had a major injury. And some of them it's been like to their, some of them haven't made it there, right? But like apart from the USA have been relatively healthy, but most of these European teams have had a massive loss, like Greece lost Giannis. Serbia, Jokic couldn't come up and be ready to play. Even out of the American-based team, you know, Canada, North American-based team, right? They lose Jamal Murray. Jamal Murray pulls out right before the tournament starts, you know? It's just France and the USA obviously Australia loses Jock Landell. Latvia loses Kristaps Porzingis. Like, it's just a huge amount of losses. Lithuania Savonis isn't available, you know, like there's just a lot of losses laid on, and it's going to look like a vastly different tournament because of this, right?
Yeah, there are a lot of big dogs who aren't going to be part of this.
Rubio, the other one. Yeah, right, for Spain. So it's just like,
yeah, and like what sucks is that a lot of these were like late outs too. Like Porzingis was like, I feel like people had a feel that he wouldn't be part of this, but like that was this week. Rubio was within like this month. Obviously, the Chacha thing was in like a warm-up game. So this stuff sucks for a lot of these teams. Landale's was this week as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, that sucks too. And then that affects Olympic qualifying too. because qualifying for these Olympics, which is Olympics that everyone wants to be part of, is going to be really, really difficult.
Yep.
And that's like you might see like Serbia not
make it.
be able to qualify for the Olympics. They might have to go play in an Olympic qualifying tournament and not be able to get through it. Like, it could be tough for some of these teams. Australia is lucky because they're basically just keep competing with New Zealand. And
yeah.
New Zealand probably wasn't going to make too much noise in their group anyway, because right. yep. they're in that group with the USA and Greece, but they lost the Webster brothers too. So any chance of them maybe sneaking to a better result than Australia in this tournament is like probably out the window now. So like it affects these teams in more than just this tournament. It affects them going forward to the Olympics next year too.
Oh, and it's always been hard coming out of Europe. Like, Europe's the toughest spot to always. Mm. It's hard enough to even get qualifications to World Cups out of there. We've got teams like, I think Latvia eliminated Turkey, who have got like Sengun, yeah. Chetty Osman, you know, like, and again, it kind of sucks there too, because they eliminate them because Porzingis is a FIBA beast, right? And then FIBA get, and then yeah. Porzingis gets the foot injury again. I've had it myself. I forget what it's it like is. Plantar. Yeah, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, shit, you know, then the tournament gets flipped on its kind of head, and yeah, anyway. But going, I suppose, then Australia after that will have to face one of the teams coming out of the Group G, Group H combo, if we say they do get through Slovenia into a quarterfinal. This is insane, right? So you've got France, Canada, and Spain sort of all in the same area of bracket, and Group H, we'll start with Group H with France and Canada. What's your vibe on those two teams? Where do you see that kind of playing out in that group?
I sort of trust France more.
Mm.
I understand Canada is super talented. The SGA is maybe the best player in this tournament. Him and yep. Luka are probably 1A and 1B as far as like the most talented players.
Yep.
But they're just like at this point, until I see more, they're just a team of talented players.
Yeah.
And so we have to see how they look under a new head coach and Jordi Fernandez. We have to see how all these guys mesh together. But they, like, talent can get you a decent way. So, like, if I'm a betting man, I'm going France 1, Canada 2.
Yeah.
But you can sort of like flip that. That doesn't really matter. France, like, we saw like France is super well drilled. Like, they competed with Australia in that warm up game that could have been their game. They could have run away with that game. Like, Nicolas Batum barely played in it. Evan Fournier is like one of the best FIBA players out there. And Rudy Gobert is really, really effective as a big in FIBA. So, like, that's helpful. And then I'm just so intrigued because the other group, Spain, Brazil.
Mm.
Now, Brazil, like, I'm not completely writing off, but like, they're not at the same level as France, Canada, Spain. But the idea that only two of those teams are going to come out of Jakarta is wild to me. The fact that one of France, Canada, Spain is not going to get through to the quarterfinal is crazy.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you here on some of it. I'm not in agreement on Brazil. Maybe it's a more...
How dare you?
But this is the thing. Yeah, this is the thing, right? But but like, their group is really easy, right? So they will go through. I think Canada and France have to be a little bit wary. I know Porzingis is out. Maybe it's me speaking from my Latvian heritage here, but I do think like... they're better than Latvia's better than Finland. So if we're talking about Australia's group, Latvia, if we're talking about like, oh, you know, Finland might be a banana peel sort of game, which we don't think it will be for Australia, but I do think it's in those sort of terms. Like, I think Latvia played Finland the other day. I'm not sure, I don't think Markkanen played, but they won by 40. You know, like, they kind of did what Australia kind of did to, probably even worse than what they did to South Sudan and sort of like in the, you know, in that Venezuela sort of territory. So I think that they're sort of like a danger. They're not going to win, but like, shit, I don't want to be like 4 points up in the fourth quarter and then all of a sudden Bertan starts going ballistic from the 3-point line, right? Like, you just don't want, you never want to be in these situations. So I do think that's a bit of a issue there, but Brazil and Spain do go through. I would be more worried about, if I was Canada or France, like, I'd be more worried about slipping up in the internal Group H than what I am against Brazil, for example. But hey, Brazil are there. They advance there. And if you stuff up, like, this is the thing with all these games, like, the competent teams who have got, who have like EuroLeague and NBA guys, like, they can beat you in a 40-minute game. Like, it can just happen because they play disciplined basketball. It's just not enough time to get that level of separation, right? So, Brazil are dangerous. I do think they are dangerous simply because they will go through to that second round. And you can't sleep in any of these, like, you can against Iran and the Ivory Coast and Lebanon, right? But you can't really sleep in any of these games in this bottom half of the draw because you'll wind up in real, real trouble, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and then I bring it forward to, so like in Group G, like Iran, respectfully, like no, Cote d'Ivoire, no. I'm still, do you see nothing in Brazil?
I don't see them qualifying for a quarterfinal, but they could potentially fuck up Canada, France, or Spain making a quarterfinal. Yeah. No, they won't make a quarterfinal.
And like, I didn't want to overreact to like just a warm up win over Australia, right? Because like, it doesn't mean that much, but like, it doesn't mean nothing. So like, I look at it and like, they beat Australia like by being like kind of big and shooting it really well, and they did that without Raul Neto, they did that without Felicio, they did it without Didi. I just think that if you have Raul Neto as like a really well drilled FIBA point guard, and then you have a backup point guard who's Marcelo Huertas, and you have fairly decently sized wings who can shoot it and not terrible bigs in guys like Caboclo and Felicio, like, they're not nothing. Like, at the very least, like, there's a balance there. Like, that's the idea of a good team.
Yep.
And so I don't want to say they're going to do nothing. And especially because, like, they obviously qualifying for the Olympics out of the Americas is extremely difficult to do. But, like, they're competing, like, if they get to that group. What group are they? Group L, which is like their second group phase. Like, if they get to that point, they have like a really significant incentive to go and give it to Canada.
Yep.
Who maybe isn't as well drilled as them, because maybe they're not as well versed in FIBA ball. And maybe they go and do something. Now, I'm not saying they are going to, but I feel like we shouldn't write them off as like in Iran category or in a Lebanon. I think they're a step higher. I think they're just a step below. Not a step low like a France or Canada, but they're a step higher than like a Lebanon and an Iran.
Yep.
I think they can do, I'm not going to say they're going to do something, but they're not going to do nothing.
No, I agree with you on this. Like, this is the thing. I don't think they're making the quarterfinals, right? But I think they're a team that, it's a 15-4 run to start the game. Now we're down 11 with, you know, like, we're down 11 halfway through the first, and now we've got to make up 11 points in 30 to 35 minutes. And they're just going to be a team that can dictate.
Drop into a zone.
Yeah.
And then what's like Huertas going to do? Oh, they found all the mismatches on that zone that Australia threw against them.
Yeah.
Like, they're just well drilled and they're just smart enough that they can maybe do something.
No, this is the thing. I agree with 100% agree on this. I think, and this is what you get with like the better, you know, with any of the European teams outside of probably Georgia and maybe Finland, right, is that you're going to get that you're going to get that as a worry, you know, like they're just well drilled, and Brazil fits that category too. There's got a bunch of experienced guys who've always been good, and you're going to sweat. Like, if you get in that sort of, if you get down to any of these teams, they're going to find ways to manage games. And you're not, like, even if you're down, you're down 15-4, for example, as I said before, like, yeah, you still might win, but you're probably not going to win that game by 20 or 15 then. You know, it's going to be a single-digit game. And, like, you just don't want to wind up in that scenario, because if France, Canada, or Spain slip up against Brazil, that's it. It's over, right? That's kind of your campaign is over, unless you sweep the board on the other teams and it gets real complicated on the math. Right, so it's just going to be hard.
So if we're mocking this, so let's say out of Okinawa, who's getting through? Let's say Australia, because we don't want to just like eliminate Australia for the sake of this podcast.
No, they're not. I don't think they're being eliminated. Who else is coming out? Australia, Germany are coming out of the Group E, Group F, right? And then
Germany, and then who's coming out of Jakarta?
Far out. We got. I've got France in. I've got France in as well because I just think they're proven in both regards. Yep. They have elite level talent, plus they have an ability to win games. Like they're the only team that's given. Like, and I'm talking the real USA, so like the Olympic team USA, yeah, etc. They've beaten them, right? And then in the gold medal game,
France
it was
is
like
a real fucking team.
Yeah, they're like I automatically, just out of respect for that group, am going to put them through. They're through. Now the question for me is, do we pick Canada's talent or Spain's, you know, for lack of a better term, understanding of the international game and knowing how to win these games? Who you got between those two?
Oh, you way to flip it on me. As in, I'm undecided, but my brain tells me that, as in, am I picking the best player in the tournament?
Yeah, this is, no, like,
or,
yeah.
Like, practically, yeah. Or am I picking, like, a top four team who's done it historically?
Yeah, that's the question. It's hard, right? I typically would say, like, going into the tournament, going into like before we saw any of the practice games or any of that sort of stuff, I was picking Canada, right? Like I thought Canada would go through. Yeah. They've looked pretty good in the practice games. Like, you know, it's a bunch of tight games against Germany, essentially, is what we've seen, right? And Germany, we also think are a contender as well. But my issue was like, I don't think I was expecting Spain to be this good. So Spain. No. That was, and then I've seen
Spain, like Rudy Fernandez is like 38 years old. You're not thinking that this team is like built to what go deep in a tournament like this, but
yeah,
they have pieces and they're deep, and the Hernan Gomez brothers are legit.
Yeah, that's what like, I thought. Like when Rubio went down, I was like, oh, okay. When Rubio was like, I'm out. I'm like, oh, well, that's it. That there goes that interesting group sort of thing. And then they pushed the USA to the limit in a practice game. I know it's a practice game, but you know it's still there. They beat
in Spain.
They beat up Slovenia, you know, and you just like can, and then Canada. You go, well, they're relatively unproven at this level. I'm going to pick Canada, and I'm just going
to
do it.
All right, I was going to push you for it. It's your podcast. You have to pick one.
Yeah, I'm picking Canada. I just think they go through. You're on the same vibe in that.
Yeah, I think so. It's just tough to not see SGA pulling them through. They are deep, like, and I generally lean on that. If you have like really good elite dudes, if you're deep. And you can play D, then you can generally progress pretty far. Like that's pretty sustainable.
Yep.
So like I'm okay with Canada there. And what's weird is that those two groups, like the Okinawa region and the Jakarta region, are the most interesting. The other regions, respectfully, are just not
boring.
Like at all.
Yeah, and I will say we pick that, and then it'll probably be Spain and Brazil. Right, that's.
Yeah, wait, I'm really gonna. I'm gonna arrive in Manila to a Latvia, Cote d'Ivoire.
I don't. Yeah, it's gonna be. I will say about that. Those two, though, that like I, you know, Spain. I have some even worries about France. Right, I put France in that conversation a little bit too, where I have that. You know, we had that discussion about Paddy and Joe and that earlier. I go, well, when does the run end? You know, with that team. And maybe that comes, you know, maybe that comes now with Fournier and Gobert and all that. Maybe that isn't what it was before, but you just kind of got to give that team the benefit of the doubt, I think.
Yeah, and I don't want to, we don't want to read too much into practice games and warm-up games, but like Evan Fournier still looks good.
Yeah.
And I trust like Nando De Colo to come in and make the noise. And I trust Rudy Gobert, and they're deep as well. They're just, for me, they're too deep and too talented.
Yep.
And two, like, together to not be able to, at the very least, get to the quarterfinals.
Now, the USA have been gifted one of the easiest runs of all time. And
who's the other team?
Okay, so let's do this now. So we'll do Group C and Group D. So Group C, we've got USA and Greece, right? I think it's pretty easy to pick that.
Yes. Oh, is it?
Do you reckon Greece, New Zealand Greece can beat Greece?
Not without the Websters.
No.
And it's not like they're like, it's not, it's not like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. You know, it's not missing those two, but like they're legitimate scoring pieces for them. Like I would say USA, Greece.
Yeah.
And then on the other group, Lithuania.
And Montenegro.
And like, is it Montenegro? Just,
they're
is
just,
it just those two? And then, geez, USA has it easy.
Yeah, yeah. So then we've got the next stage of it being USA, Greece, Lithuania and Montenegro. Who you got going through? I'll give you my two picks. I've got the USA and Lithuania going through.
So do I, because I can't see Lithuania being challenged in their group.
No.
And those first group phase games carry over. And so I imagine they're going to go in 3-0, lose to the USA, beat Greece.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's how you punch a ticket, basically.
And I'm not sleeping on Lithuania either. Like, everyone will talk about Sabonis missing, etc., but I think it kind of removes a complication for them. In recent years, since the development of Sabonis, they've kind of really always struggled to integrate Valanciunas and Sabonis together in the same five. And I think this will... And then they've gone, oh, okay, we'll go smaller at the four and then we'll just play one of them at the five. So they were realistically... Like, neither of them are really playing 30 minutes plus on this team, just because it schematically did not work. I think this removes some of the confusion. It's bad if Valanciunas goes down injured. Then the whole thing, the whole house of cards collapses. But I actually think Valanciunas is historically a better FIBA player than what Sabonis is. And I'm actually...
Yeah, Sabonis' fit always looked a bit clunky, right?
Yeah. So I think this removes some of the confusion where now... They can spread it out. Lithuania always have shooters, right? And they still do with this campaign as well. And I think they can spread it out a little bit more. And there's a little bit of that confusion. And they're probably a bit more rangy and athletic on the defensive end now as well. So I kind of... I won't say I prefer this team without Sabonis, but it's not like the loss of Landell... Even though Sabonis, yeah, I think we both agree, is a superior player to Landell in, you know, NBA and global terms at the moment. It's not as he's not as big a loss, ironically, as that. And
yeah, Sabonis is like an easier hole to fill.
Yeah, they have pieces
because you can fill it. Yeah, you can fill it with whatever, yeah, basically, and they have it right. Whereas Landell, the problem was they don't have another Landell to just step in, and because it's just like that spot was so prominent. Whereas, like, you know, they still have, like, a Valanciunas. Like, they have, like, their anchor.
Yeah.
And now it makes things, like, a little bit less clunky for them. Like, they are missing other dudes.
Yeah.
Which is, like, maybe my issue with them. Like, they're missing guys like Grigonis, who's like a cool wing player. Like, they're missing, like, Lukavicius. Like, these are legitimate guys as well. So,
yeah.
They have a bunch of omissions from this team, just for one reason or another. So, like, I don't know if I'm going to put maybe as much stock in them as you might, but I still think they obviously have enough to get through to the quarters.
Yeah, because what's the old mantra? They're kind of going with, hey, we've got less talent, but like maybe that'll complicate things less, and we've just got a bunch of... The Lithuanian way is kind of like the... You know, relative to their neighbors, they're sort of like Lithuania is sort of like the working class country, right, in that area. And I think they kind of value that. You know, we talk about boomers culture, et cetera, that, you know, like Lithuania prides itself on being this working class, like disciplined part of the world, right? And I think this team, they can really get around that because it is. Like, this is a working class group right here. Like, Valanciunas is the ultimate example of that. And I think that gets you wins in this region. Does that extend out once you have to meet the talent beyond this area? Probably not, right? But we just go from there. So you've got those two teams as well. USA is obvious. We can talk about where they sit. I know I got to get you back to let you get back to packing soon, but I'll go through Group A and Group B now. This is pretty obvious, right?
Is it? Well, so it's like Group A. I've got Italy and the Dominican.
Yeah.
And then Group B, I think, like, I got Serbia, even though Serbia, like, they still have pieces, but obviously no Jokic. But then outside of Serbia, is it Puerto Rico for you, or are you thinking like left field and going like a South Sudan?
This was the issue for me. I had no idea how to pick Group B, a second team here. I instinctively lean towards Puerto Rico just because, you know, like that kind of wins. I don't really buy into this is going to sound bad, but it's like I never tend to want to pick Asian region teams apart from Australia. And I never want to pick African-based teams, really, unless they're super loaded, talented, like we kind of saw with Nigeria, et cetera. Just like
Nigeria.
So... I'm going to go Puerto Rico, but I wouldn't be shocked if South Sudan get through.
Yeah, and South Sudan have like Olympic qualifying incentives to,
yeah,
obviously everyone's trying super hard, but like they're trying to be the African team that comes out of this tournament.
Yeah.
And so if they're able to do that, that's like really impressive for them.
Mm.
But yeah, Puerto Rico is just like as much as we can look, like we as Australians can look at South Sudan and understand the players mm. they have, and the fact that like there is talent there, and like there is like an organized style of basketball that they can play. It's just very tough picking such a new team. Like
yeah.
they just haven't been together for that long, and they had like a really awesome AfroBasket run, mm. and they've done really cool things. And like, I don't root for teams. I'd root for them though. Like
yeah.
they're a really cool team to get around. But Puerto Rico has like context, like historical context. So yeah. you sort of trust that they can do it again.
Yeah,
I feel like they're a safer pick.
Yeah, 100%. And I think my worry with South Sudan is what happens when things start going wrong with these teams who haven't been there before, right? Like, how does a team react when it gets punched in the mouth? And I'm not 100% sure I'm there with that, with them yet. But hey, but at the end of the day, like, Group A, Group B, we're both saying Serbia and Italy get through, right? In what order, though? That's the question.
Serbia, Italy. Oh, see, like, Italy's not bad. And I get, so Serbia still has Bogdanovic. They still have some legitimate guys. Italy just pushed, who did Italy nearly beat in a warm-up game?
Yeah,
over the past 2 days.
Yeah, I forget who it was now.
I forget what that game was, but like they're also a team. They've got Fonteccio. They've
yep.
they've got some pieces too. So, like, oof.
As this in, is what
really
I had.
Matter that much?
Well, it does matter because whoever finishes second gets the USA.
The USA. That is true. Like, look, I would just lean towards. I'd lean Serbia.
Yeah,
just because,
just bigger, more physical. They're more physical.
Pretty well drilled, exactly.
And I still think Bogdanovic is probably the best player on the court in that game. Like he's a proven FIBA superstar. Like we saw what he did in 2019. Even though the team performed under expectations, he was really, really good. Like he was every bit as good, if not better than Jokic in that campaign. So. I agree.
He's a guy who can, like a Fournier, like a Patty Mills of like 2021, he can go win you a game.
Yeah, and they've got a bunch of other replaceable parts, like interchangeable parts from the Euro League that just know how to win games. And, you know, I have respect for Fontecchio, etc. I think Italy are a good team. I just, you know, it takes a lot to beat Serbia in that situation. Yeah. Who are we picking, though, out of, you know, then moving that? Now we're going into crossovers, right? So I think the top half of the draw, it's a bit easier to predict the quarterfinal crossovers, right? So say Serbia, Italy, USA, Lithuania. Who are you picking between Serbia and Lithuania?
I'm going to be honest. I have no indication until like we see these teams. I've got no idea. respectfully.
Yeah.
Like, pick either of them.
Yeah. I think
I'm assuming I've got to double check this, but this, as in, if I'm looking at a bracket, is there a crossover to the other group?
Yeah, there's a crossover. So it'll be USA versus Italy. Say what we had before. It'll be USA versus Italy and Serbia versus Lithuania. So we're picking USA to beat Italy.
Let's pick the USA.
Yep.
And who's your pick for Serbia, Lithuania?
This is where I was going to pick my, you know, I was going to do my surprise pick and pick Lithuania. But I think for the purposes of the pod, I do think Serbia are probably the more likely. But there's, you know, like there's always this upset game. Like remember how Argentina beat France at 2019, right? I was shocked. I thought France were going to win the tournament, right? There's always one. And I feel like that is a real potential to go down in that one, just because I think Valanciunas presents something very different. The question is going to be their ability to guard Bogdanovic. I don't think Serbia are that good. So I'll pick Lithuania in a surprise, but let's, for the purposes of the pod, I get the feeling you'd lean Serbia just because Bogdanovic is the best player on the court in that environment. Let's move Serbia through because that's probably a more likely scenario, but I just think that's a... I wouldn't be... Yeah, I am a betting man, and I wouldn't be going near that game. Like, that's just a danger game, that one. And, okay, so then bottom...
So is Australia-Canada, to be honest. If we're looking at this other side, like Australia, Canada's, yep, and then France, Germany, geez, that's stacked.
Yeah. Who are you picking?
I mean, I would pick Australia even without thinking about having this pod not end immediately.
Yeah.
I would still pick Australia.
I'm picking Australia as well. I just think they're more disciplined. I think they're bigger. Like, they're just... They're not bigger at the big spots, but Australia is a big team across the floor. Yeah. You know,
they're bigger, like, across the board, definitely.
Yeah, they have some seriously big guards. So I just think, yeah, they'll be okay. And, like, that's the thing, right? Like, Thybulle and Cooks, like I always laugh. Like, Cooks is my height, but he's double my height with the wingspan, right? Like, the wingspan on Cooks is just... freaking insane, right? And it's the same with Thybulle. Yeah. Thybulle's wingspan is insane. Plus, you add all the athleticism, you add these things. It's not just a matter of, hey, go stand in front of the measuring tape here. We're gonna check what you are. It's like there's a different in terms of the athleticism and the length with these guys. That's why it's so interchangeable that they can do this. So I think we're bigger than what people give us respect for. So I'm picking Australia versus Canada too. I know we'll probably be betting underdogs in that one, but I bet on Gorgon in that situation and just the way in which our team is structured. Germany, France, that's the tough one.
Yeah, like I would pick France just based on everything we've said about them at this going into this point, but like Germany is talented and they're deep. So like I'm not like France isn't paying like $1.10 to win. Like this is like almost a toss up.
Yeah.
But like if something's gonna get a team over the line, you know, I trust France's experience and things like that.
Yeah, I lean France 2/3 to Germany 1/3 in this one. I kind of give France that, you know, 66.66 recurring percent chance here. I'm leaning France in this. One thing I will say about these groups, though, is that I think any of these four teams can win the whole thing. How's that?
You know, I agree. I don't know if I would agree with, like, whoever comes out of the sort of Serbia, Lithuania.
No.
I feel like they're maybe a step below those other three teams. Wait, are you talking about the four teams
in group D, group E that becomes, what does it become, group J or something? Is that what we become after group. That? The Australia, anyone out of Australia, Germany, France and Canada can win the tournament.
Could win it all. I agree. I think it's literally those four plus the USA as like the top five.
Yep. I'm fully
agreeing. And also Spain or whoever doesn't make it out of...
Yeah,
that Jakarta win.
I actually think Spain
There's
is
a top
better
six
than
and
any
it's those six.
And can you imagine Spain's the number one ranked team in the world, and this is the draw they get? Like,
well, and like especially because, and like I get it because in Group G, like they are the obvious top group in that group. But like, it would suck because if let's say France eliminates them, like France already has an Olympic bid, so
yeah,
like Spain could very well get through this without having qualified for Paris.
Yep.
And that's going to be weird. But yeah, it's just that is an odd thing that we might see a semi-final with like we're assuming either Serbia or Lithuania, who we don't think are better than Spain.
Yeah, correct. So Australia then would go on to play Serbia in a semi-final. I think this is the big takeaway is that you do not want to finish second in the group stages, you know, even in the group J, whatever it becomes then, group K, group L, all that stuff. You don't want to finish second in the second round of that because that will mean that you get the USA in a semi-final, which I think everyone is kind of wanting to avoid, but maybe shouldn't really be wanting to avoid because I'm not sure it makes that. I'm not sure they're that elevated on everyone else to be that scared of it. But say
in this scenario, though, it makes way more sense because of who's on the other side.
Yeah,
because all those other teams coming out of the Manila region.
Yeah, not great. So it's kind of more you want to play Serbia. It's not because the USA is that great, but it's kind of more you want to play Serbia, right?
Yeah.
So is that right? Will they be playing? Yeah, they will be playing Serbia because Serbia will. We're assuming they'll beat Lithuania. So yep, semi-final Australia versus Serbia. I've got Australia winning that.
So do I. And then USA France is like a toss up.
I'm going to pick USA, but
Team US.
Yeah, I think
just because of like
what it is. Yeah, that's it, right? That's the other situation there. So who did Canada lose to?
In this scenario, Canada lost to Australia.
Yep, Canada lost to Australia. That's right. Yep. So then we've got
now mock like simulation
thing. Yep. So and now
in this situation, USA Australia.
I'm going to pick the USA.
What a great outcome for my ESPN bosses.
But that's it. You get some decent ratings out of that here in Australia, I'd say. And you get your articles would get read a little bit, Olgan, as well, I think. There might be a few people
true.
Reading.
True. Thanks. Thanks.
Rather than
they're not currently read.
I'm not sure how many reads you're gonna get when it's Serbia versus France.
my Australia Japan write up's gonna go get mad traffic.
There is a big Japanese basketball following on Twitter. So just if ESPN does have the translate button, you could be on a real. Elon could be paying you some serious ad money from Twitter for that one. True, I mean, that's true. I think Australia USA. I'm gonna pick the USA in it, but I'm not. My thing about it is I don't know what we talk about before, like what the USA are going to look like when we talk about teams getting punched in the mouth and what they're kind of going to look like. It's hard to tell, right? Because against Germany, they didn't look that great. Against Spain, they didn't look that great. Will they go to another level in the tournament, or is this kind of it? Or I think it's hard to tell. We're not going to know till a semi-final.
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of like, they're the team that like talent will take them over the line. Like I was speaking with Windhorst about this. Like they don't have any guys with senior FIBA experience. The vibe seemed to be good, and they've been winning these warm up games. But they've sort of just been like crawling over these teams. Like they haven't been like absolutely dominating them. And so when they get to like the pointy end of this tournament, I've said it from the start. But those six teams we mentioned, right? The Australia, France, Germany, Canada, USA, and I guess Spain.
Yeah.
They're the six that whomever ends up in the semifinal or at that pointy end, it's a toss up from that point.
Yep.
It's just like a game by game thing. And so I feel like that's what this is too. I imagine what happens if Australia gets up on the USA like they did in the semifinal in Tokyo, but the USA doesn't have the same level of talent to then bring it back and win that game. Like there is an obvious non-zero chance that happens. And then instead of relying on like Kevin Durant and all these dudes to go and win it for him, they're instead relying on what, like Jalen Brunson and Anthony Edwards to do it instead.
And then Austin Reaves.
Talented dudes. Like,
yeah.
Probably more talented than the Australians, but they're not the same.
No.
So I would have this as like a straight toss up.
I have the USA against France and against Australia both as 50-50 games. Like, and that'll kind of shock people a little bit. I think actually, you know what? I actually think France are probably more capable of beating the USA than what Australia is, just because of the history. They do know how to dictate games with the USA better. And just the level of rim protection that France has with Rudy Gobert means, you know what, Anthony Edwards, you want to beat us from the three-point line, go for it, man. Like, go for it. It's again, I put this tournament down. I think USA can win. I think Australia can win. I think France can win. I think Canada can win. And then you're right. You start throwing in Spain, etc. on top of that. It's just harder for them, I think. But I think
Germany as well.
I actually, yeah, Germany's in the same tier as Spain. I kind of have USA, France, and Australia. I have, to be honest, if I was ranking them, I'd go USA, France, Australia, Canada, Germany, Spain.
Yeah. And it's so, kind of disappointing that we won't get a semi-final with four of those teams.
Yeah.
Just because of the nature of the draw. But I feel like that feels right going into the tournament. Like that feels like a, as far as a tier list goes, like that feels correct to me.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you.
I'm not going to pick a winner between USA and Australia right now. But like, let's say in this mock scenario, which is an overwhelming possibility that this is the outcome, that it is Australia USA, that'll be a really cool outcome.
Yeah, yeah, and it's hard to pick these games because we won't really see, like, we won't get a read on USA till the semifinal. Simple, like everyone's going to lord them. They're going to be on ESPN thumping teams by 30 or 40 points, and they're going to be dancing around on dunks at the end of the game like they did yesterday and stuff. And everyone's going to go,
really,
wow.
You really got triggered by them dancing around. They're a new team together. Come on, Carl.
I'll let you get back. I know you got to get off to Japan. I'll make my point. I'll make my point about this. I have no problem with, like, you know, I have no problem stealing the ball and dunking it, right? But if you're going to do that at the end of the game, like, kind of do it in an all-business fashion, especially in a practice. I understand if that's a gold medal moment, like, there's no questions from me at all. It's kind of like in a practice game against Germany, everyone's kind of stopped. Yeah, you know what? If Reeves wants to double-hand dunk it to put an exclamation, I have no problem with Reeves in that situation. Halliburton jumping up and down like he's a four-year-old at kindergarten, and Pat Banchero doing the same shit. Like, spare me. Like, grow up a little. Like, I don't think you see Kevin Durant doing that in a practice game. Right, I just don't see. Yeah, there's a different
the vibes
vibe.
The vibes are good. They've just completed like a really impressive warm up game run where these teams have wanted to beat them. They have not played at this level before. Like they're just like friends, happy for each other. I know.
I understand.
It doesn't matter to me.
No, it doesn't. And like, this is the thing. And good on Germany for not socking someone after that, right? Like, it's, you know, like Germany.
You're
just
saying
took
that as though Dennis Schröder wasn't talking shit the entire game.
Yeah, this is
and
the
like,
thing.
He's not going to talk shit.
It's not like if they turned around and started pointing and jawing at Schröder, I don't have a problem with that either, right? Like, that's fine by me as well. You can talk shit, you can do that sort of stuff, but I don't know. The Halliburton thing just seemed like real immature to me, and the same as the Banchero thing. It's not that they've caused offense to me or caused offense to Germany, etc. Like that. It's not on that sort of reason. It just came across as immature and act like you've been there before, like out of respect for your own program. Okay. Sort of. That's how I view it. People kind of took it as though like I was upset for Germany and all that. Nah, like stuff it. Like Germany talks shit. I get it. And if Halliburton had gone up to Schröder and started just going at him, I would not have had a problem with that at all. Right? Like that's fine. It's kind of just like, hey, you're the USA and you're jumping and dancing around like your kids. And I know a lot of these guys are, right? But like, you kind of just kind of go like, yeah, we're better than this. But anyway,
I don't have strong opinions on it.
No, that's it. Like, that was kind of the point. I just saw it and go, oh, that's not USA.
I appreciate your opinion.
But anyway.
I don't agree, but like, I appreciate it.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. We're both going to like differ on some, on various points as we have over the years, but I do thank you, despite the fact we do disagree at times on certain things and agree wholeheartedly on other things. It's been a pleasure to have you on, man. Also, make sure that you do check out the Ball in the Real World podcast. Make sure that you do check out Olgan's pod this week with Windhorst. Huge on Ball in the Real World. They do a full comprehensive preview of the World Cup. Make sure you check that out, you know, after you've obviously listened to this. So make sure you jump onto that straight away. Also, make sure that you follow all of Olgan's reporting whilst he is at the FIBA World Cup. Is there any details you want to give our listeners, Olgan, to find your stuff?
Just like at Twitter, at X, if you want to follow my exes, my zeets. At Olgan Ulich, on Instagram at Olgan ESPN, and then just generally our stuff's like at the top of Google, which is cool. But yeah, ESPN.com.au, you'll find all my stuff. Are you getting back? Are you going to be consistent with this pod now, Carl?
I'm going to be consistent with this pod. I'm currently...
Over the NBL season?
Yeah, the NBL season. I will do both weeks of the World Cup, and I will be back for the NBL season. The shape that it takes will be interesting. Currently in conversations with Seb to come back, which looks like it may be occurring. It's been hard the last couple of years. We've both had various things going on in our lives with work, moving, etc., that made it really, really difficult. It was certainly a lot easier in COVID and pre-COVID to be doing it. But yeah, I'm very much hoping that Seb will be back, because I do, like, as much as, you know, I do rate the pod when he's there, I do really, I enjoy it as a process a lot more. When doing it with Seb. So hopefully that will come to fruition. We're hoping so. He's wasn't able to be on the pod today. It's the weakest excuse ever, getting married this weekend. So that is lazy. So I'll be there in the tux on Saturday. But no, I will be back.
Yeah, good. I understand and appreciate the FOMO that happens when you like consume the NBL and don't have a platform, the same platform to talk about it. I understand the FOMO.
No, I know. You were away from it for a while too, right? Like, it's just like, shit, I kind of missed this a little bit, and I didn't think I would.
You always have a feeling that, like, oh, like, I could have done this better than that person or whatever. Like, it's just the feelings that come through your head.
Yeah.
So yeah, I understand you wanting to like push and get back into it.
No.
Because like the space just remains like pretty open. There's like a lot more media, and it's cool, and it continues to like, the trajectory is upward, but like there's still like a ton of open space there for things like this. And so yeah, I appreciate
you guys do. I will be back. I will be back. It's just the format that the pod takes. For our listeners out there, that'll be the deciding point over the next couple of weeks, is whether Seb will be back. But I will definitely be doing the pod this year.
Cool. Well, yep. I look forward to it.
And I look forward to having you on, Olgan, if you come back today after I mocked your articles against the Japanese article. Too easy, my brother.
Nah, I made fun of you for getting triggered by a dunk. So
That's it. We're even on it. Nah, thank you again, my brother. Safe flight. Take care while you're over there. I hope it's a great time, my man.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Thanks to Olgan. Thanks to you for listening to the Best Than Greenway podcast. You can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Please subscribe. If you have some spare time, leave the pod a review. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Carl Beston. Much love, everyone. And enjoy the World Cup. And I look forward to talking to you next week.